Hello.
Hello.
And welcome
to My Favorite Murder, the
podcast.
That's right.
The podcast that's true crime. It's comedy. It's coming at you live from the Exactly Right Studios here in downtown Glendale.
That's Karen.
It's on the razor's edge of Glendale.
That's Karen still.
That's Georgia Hardstark over there.
And listen.
Look.
We're trying.
We're now fresh off of two back-to-back weeks of touring.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, the guys in Def Leppard are saying, so what?
Yeah.
Fuck you, child.
But they get whiskey.
That's nothing.
All we get is fucking chicken fingers and sparkling wine. And that's if you're in a good spot.
And that's if you haven't drank all your drinks in the 90s, which I did, and get nothing now. Yeah, I could do touring for months at a time if I could just willy-nilly snort cocaine and ants.
Sure.
And all the things that those guys used to do.
Did they snort ants?
You never heard that story?
No.
Of like, it was when Ozzy Osbourne was on tour with, I think, Motley Crue.
Yeah.
And at one point, it might have been Ozfest or something, but at one point they got off a bus and Ozzy got down on the cement and snorted up a line of ants.
I feel like you only get so many snorts in your life, so why waste it on fucking critters?
Because maybe you're on a certain drug that makes critters seem so appealing.
And it makes it so fun. You want to just make your friends laugh.
Yeah, she's just trying to impress Vince Neil, aren't we all?
I mean, at the end of the day, that's all podcasts are.
That's all any of us are doing is like, look over here, Vince.
NPR. We're on to
Terry Glass. You know that's who you want. You know you want him.
We all do. Can I tell you a story?
Please.
About my mom.
Yes.
Janet. Janet would often text me things saying, you're on the front page of Yahoo News. Or, recently she, like, shit like that. And I go to Yahoo News and like, what are you fucking, like, there's nothing. What are you talking about? And I'd look for it and there's nothing. Or she'd be like, you're everywhere. I saw your book on whatever the fuck. And then last week she texted me, pigtails, just the word pigtails. You're everywhere. So I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I finally talked to her and I think she doesn't remember the fact that she put My Favorite Murder as a, what is it called?
A search item?
Yeah. So like every time there's a news thing, it comes up.
An alert.
So she just thinks that we're insanely famous and just keep coming up on her Yahoo News. She thinks we're the front page of Google.
Again?
Georgia, Pigtails is the MFM animated, the new MFM animated.
Our little girl with the gun and
that's
Nick
right.
Terry's beautiful animation.
Yeah, so she thinks that, she said, you're everywhere, pigtails. And I was like, what are you? And there was like a thing I made fun of her about on stage about like pigtails and how she'd be mad at me. And I was like, oh shit, here it starts. But
no.
No,
she's just going off those Google alerts.
And I just don't think she knows. So I'm going to let her.
You just let her. And be like, yeah, if you don't want your name in one of those alerts, Jan, you need to tighten up your game.
That's right.
Get a little more respectful.
Can you please?
Would you ever?
How dare you?
What have you been doing since you got home from tour?
Oh, I got foot surgery.
Yeah,
like
how
a real
was
asshole.
It?
It was not what I expected. Turns out general anesthesia is not the same thing as local anesthesia.
No, I would say in the medical world, it's the opposite.
General mm-hmm. sounds so chill.
It's almost like anesthesia from 3 feet back.
Yeah,
is what you're thinking.
It's here, it's there.
You know, general anesthesia. You won't feel it. Don't worry about
it. That's what I thought it would be.
Instead of night-night.
Night-night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got night-nighted out of there.
And I got a tumor taken off my toe.
Good. That's good.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no regrets for that.
I mean, Nashville, I'm coming at you next weekend.
Georgia has a precious little boot.
One cowboy boot and the other.
A medical boot.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's up with you?
I'm glad that you just got some business taken care of.
Me too.
I had brilliantly made an appointment for a 2-hour massage.
Ugh.
For the day after we got back.
Oh, why are you so smart?
I don't know. Well, but it's from the lady that you recommended from that whole place.
The facial and
salon.
Shit?
Yes.
Oh, that's like your place
Trina,
now.
It's the spot. You know, sometimes when you get, when I have signed up for something, I just want it. I don't want to talk about it. Mm-mm. I don't want someone to ask me questions about all my feelings about...
You don't want to fill out a form between what parts of your body encircle weird shoulders and shit?
The answer is none of my business. Yeah, I don't know. It all hurts me. Please solve it.
Yeah. You and should know what parts hurt me.
How about you dig
them.
In? Yeah, how about you get your fingers all warmed up and dig in? You tell me what parts I should be focusing on. So we had for me as a person who was looking forward to it for like 12 days, was the longest interview process of talking about things.
And you're like, is this part of the 2 hours?
Exactly.
I was like,
is this cutting? Is this eating into my time? You're trying to burn off time at the top. But
like, how different do you think the massage would have been from you having to fill out a fucking form, which is stressful and not chill, which is not what you want in a massage, and just getting in there with her fingers?
Just digging in. Get me into that pan flute area. I don't want to talk to anybody ever. Pan flute. Especially 4 minutes before I'm supposed to be in Relaxation City. Just let me go to there.
And if you leave anything out, you're not going to be fixed.
I know.
Okay.
I do have to tell people I have epilepsy, though, because that would be a little shocker.
How annoying.
But then it turned out, so does she. And then she had all kinds of recommendations. And I was like, literally, we can do this anytime.
Yeah.
Oh, lady, I'll take you to lunch. Aww. Can you please just dig into my back now? So she does it. And afterwards, she told me that my back and neck are so tight. She goes, your neck muscles wouldn't let me get in there at all. So like, she couldn't even massage the muscles she needed to massage because there was muscles on top of those that were like no admittance.
She was doing like a skin massage.
She was like, she thought I was half robot. She seemed like she was on the verge of tears. Oh, when she was telling me,
I'm going to quit and go back to school for what?
For people who are this mentally ill,
communications.
But they put everything into their back. She was just like, how do you, there's lumps under that side. I'm like, yeah, I know, that's my side.
Get around that.
And then the other side's pretty much the same. It was hilarious. But anyway, but here's what I thought you would be excited to hear. She was like, do you ever take baths?
Oh.
And I was like, I really don't. Mostly because my bathtub is old and I picture all the feet that have been in it. But she was like, if you can start taking baths and soaking in Epsom salt, just to get the beginnings of the muscles.
You have room in that backyard for a fucking above ground jacuzzi.
I have an in-ground jacuzzi.
Well, shit.
I just never get in.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I know. It's very subtle. It's very subtle and off to the side.
How do you not go in that?
I don't know, because then I'm like, then I'm going to smell like chlorine, and I don't know. It seems weird. Like, I'm all by myself in the backyard.
Yes!
Smoking a cigar in the jacuzzi.
Yes! Karen, that's all anyone wants to see. Instagram that shit.
Can they see?
You are a jacuzzi influencer from now on, and I need it to happen.
I do want everyone to know that the jacuzzi was invented by Roy Jacuzzi, and that's why it's called that. Yes. Look it up. Roy might be the wrong name.
I believe you.
But, that's a family name, jacuzzi. Isn't that hilarious?
That's so cute.
I know. I love that.
I love a jacuzzi.
I mean,
get your swim trunks. Well, when I was a kid and my parents divorced. And so we had to go to my dad's house every other weekend to stay with him. And he stayed in these like divorced dad apartment buildings that had a fucking pool and jacuzzi, which is the best.
Yeah.
So he'd always say, bring your swim trunks and let's go have a nice jacuzzi. So now that I live in an apartment building that has a nice jacuzzi, I fucking go take a nice jacuzzi.
You're all about it.
Dude, it's chill as fuck.
Now, how are your swim trunks? Are they real small or are they like 60s style to the knee?
No, they're big and trunky.
Suspenders involved?
Always.
Sure.
Bring your swim trunks.
That's, my dad calls them swim trunks too. My dad made no adjustments raising two girls to any girl stuff at all.
The thought of saying like something that covers your boobs is just like too much.
No, couldn't happen.
No.
Trunks. It's trunks or nothing. Get out.
don't go nothing.
Don't. We have would definitely not be involved.
The Jensen and Holes podcast is coming out.
Starting Monday. This Monday.
It's not an April Fool's joke.
It's just fucking straight up real.
It's real. It's fucking crappening.
Dreams
up in you.
Come true.
There you go.
For me and you.
We are Paul Holes' boss.
Don't.
Kind of. Don't worry about it.
Sorry, Contra Costa County. You're out and we're in.
Couldn't keep him? We grabbed him.
But we got him.
Yeah.
Yes, Billy Jensen and Paul Holes have their brand new podcast, The Murder Squad, with Jensen and Holes starting Monday. Days away.
Yeah.
How so many? Exciting. 4 days?
Let's say four.
Let's say it's four.
It's not an April Fool's joke.
It's for real.
It's true. We would never do that to you.
Not about this.
Not about this.
Not about these two. And we really have to, we need to sit for a moment and speak on the beautiful photograph they had taken of themselves for it. It's so hilarious. Ugh. It's like they've been waiting all their lives to be podcast models.
They're like, we know our pose. Robin Von Swank, our friend who's a photographer, just take it.
Yeah. Just take it. How about you dim those lights in this fake murder squad desk area?
Mm-hmm. And we'll look serious.
It's so, there's something for everyone. It's like the poetry girls can like Billy because he's the guy that looks like he's in a band.
Yep.
And then the librarian girls can like Paul because he's the DNA scientist.
Yeah.
With a little something more to offer.
Yeah. And then the sleuths can help solve the crimes.
That's right. You don't have to pick a boy.
That's
not necessary.
We're not trying to objectify anyone here. You are? Yeah.
It might be too late.
It wouldn't be the worst.
With that.
And they can have a minute of objectification.
They can have a touch of sexism.
Look.
And just be like, hey, it'll make you, it's better for your character. It worked for us all these years in Hollywood.
Show a little skin.
Yeah.
How Billy,
unbutton a third button.
Billy, come on. It'll make you just like more friendly.
Show a little skin. Can you both wear, it's fine if you wear your button down Oxford shirts, but how about you both wear short shorts for this?
Loose, gain 5 pounds in your beard. Gain 5 pounds of beard and let's fucking, and you'll look great.
Have beard?
Yeah. Cause you know, like, it's like lose 5 pounds, but it's like, no, get your beard.
Yeah, that's right. No, you're saying this is what the new sexism is.
Yeah.
I love it.
Where's your beard? I want you to look like a bartender.
Yeah.
Or a mixologist.
Can you not grow a beard? Ooh, sorry. Oh, you didn't get the part.
Yeah. Sorry. Go get a beard implant.
Sorry. We need you to be bald like Jean-Luc Picard. Oh, you can't be bald? Well, then I guess you don't get the part.
Mm-mm.
Men.
Goodbye. Men! do you have anything?
Men!
Men!
I got nothing, girl. I can't concentrate.
That Janet thing was all I had. And I've been saving it. It took me everything not to tell that to you at the live shows last weekend.
You squirreled that one away.
I squirreled it away. It's been hard.
Well,
I don't know where
we
are.
I don't either. I'm tired. But also we had such a good time.
Yes.
We did Kansas City, Des Moines and Omaha. Mm-hmm. I almost said Ottawa, I swear
to
God.
Don't you dare.
And Omaha.
The week before that, we did Pittsburgh. We did Pittsburgh.
Cincinnati. And Indianapolis. So we're doing some, you know, touring. We're doing touring.
It's like, I'm tired and exhausted, but like those cities were so much fun to do and everyone was so incredible that it's...
Back to back.
Yeah.
Each one, like, honestly, we were putting up... you know, the social media posts of thank you, but like there were so many good, like detailed things where I wanted to, like, each city could have gotten their own long 240 character thank you because we had such a good time.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful and all those theaters are beautiful and filled.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a little piece of trivia that I know for a fact my father would love to hear. Did I tell him? I'm not sure. That at our show in Omaha, every seat was filled.
I know.
And apparently that doesn't happen. It sounds like, oh yeah, of course, whatever. But it's very rare that every single person actually shows up and fills their seat.
As someone with annoyingly good vision who can see about 20 rows out.
Yeah.
I see those four empty seats and wonder who got in a fight with whom or whose fucking car broke down.
Who's stuck in the elevator.
Who's stuck in the elevator. I see it and I think, what happened to them? Or so that actually is a big deal. Can we talk about you thinking that there was a real live cat in the audience?
Yes. That was great. What was that? Was that Kansas City?
Yeah.
That was amazing. I thought...
This girl... held up this lifelike, like, fur animal of Elvis and held it in a way that looked like the way you'd hold a cat. Steven knows.
And the it was a stuffed animal, but the way the animal was shaped, it was hunched over her hand. So the second I looked over, she held it up and everyone started clapping.
It was a very like Lion King-esque moment. Yes. And Karen was like disgusted by it. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's adorable.
I was like, do not bring a cat into this situation. They don't imagine the screaming. Like, all I could picture was that whoever's arm was holding that cat up was probably underneath covered in blood, because that cat would have been scrambling to get out of there at the applause part.
It was a stuffed animal.
And the whole time it was a stuffed animal. And then in the meet and greet, we met the girl and she was saying, I dressed up as you. We, the two women who were there said, we dressed up as you for Halloween. And the woman holding the cat, I keep wanting to say girl, holding the cat said, and I had this made so I could be like you.
But she, and then she
handed it to you. And Georgia said, thank you, and grabbed it and hugged it, and I watched the girl's face fall. Georgia was over the moon, and this girl is
so
like,
much.
"Oh no!" I have and to Karen give goes, her.
"I don't think she's giving that to you." And I went, "Oh God! Oh God! Oh God!"
It was. I had to step in only because that thing looked expensive.
It's so expensive,
and she looked. She was just like, "Okay, like if somebody's gonna take it, what are you gonna do?" So I had to a little bit do that.
That was so humiliating. It's
bad. But then I told my balloon story, because it's the exact same thing of when I thought a girl was bringing me a bouquet of balloons after I recorded my album back in the green room. But she was just the girl on the next show bringing some balloons for the show.
What'd she say? These aren't for you.
I at like a insane prom queen turned to her and went, oh, thank you. This big over the top, like, and she just pulled them back toward herself and went, these are mine. Yeah.
Everything hurts all the time.
It all hurts. I'm always wrong.
There's moments of happiness in this life, but the majority of it,
there's a lot of wrong.
Awkward wrongness.
Weird grabbing at things that you don't, like, you don't want to go on the record as I tried to steal that girl's cat.
No.
But
we
at the
all
same
have
time,
those stories.
In that moment, you just thought that was what was happening.
Yeah. And you went with it. Yeah. And fuck everyone else. And yes, you know this is personal.
Guess what? We have passions. Strong balloon cat passions.
I have the real Elvis, and that's good enough for me.
But then you would love a stuffed one.
I actually love a stuffed
one. I mean, it was so real that I thought someone held up a real cat at a comedy show.
It was probably like $500, as you said.
Mins.
Okay. Well, I'm happy for her.
Well, I hope she's happy.
I really hope she's happy.
I would like to special shout out.
Okay.
Because at that same... Oh, no. Sorry. I was going to say at that same show. But that's not true at all. It was days later. At the Omaha show, in the meet and greet, we got to meet Grandma Cheryl. These two women, young women, brought their grandma. Mm-hmm. They went and got her, sprung her from the home on a Sunday to bring her to the live My Favorite Murder podcast. Why you would do that to your grandmother, I don't know. But they did it. And she was in the meet and greet, came around that corner. The girls explained, we just got her. And then Grandma Cheryl looked at me and goes, I'm missing Sunday night bingo for this. And I almost like ugly sobbed on her, because she was... a classic grandma.
And you go, you said, what way are you, $1.50?
Yep.
And she goes, actually $4.
More like $4.
And I grabbed her hands and they felt like my grandma's hands.
Yeah.
That soft.
She was wearing like a cardigan sweater that was a sweater my grandma had.
Yeah.
For sure. It was just like, it was like going back in time. It was the most beautiful. To those young women who brought Grandma Cheryl, you brought us the best gift ever.
Yeah.
And then they sent a picture on Twitter, and then afterwards I said Grandma Cheryl made us cry with joy, and they said she can't wait to tell all of her friends at the rest home about her evening, where I'm like, please leave some stuff out. Please don't tell all of them everything.
Grandma's.
It was beautiful. We had a great, great time.
Yeah.
It was really nice, cool town. Every town.
Yeah.
Who knew Des Moines was like the fucking coolest town?
Who knew? I want to hang out there.
I want to hang out there. Their shirts are great.
Yeah.
They had a local store called Rayground that was making SSDGM, like, get a job, buy your own shit, stay out of the cornfield.
And they donated all the money from that to, and the backlog of like $1,400.
Yes.
Fucking amazing.
Yes.
Like, money where mouth is, etc.
Yes, they're doing it. That was the Des Moines Murderinos. If they have a special name, we don't know what it is. Sorry. But I mean, like, so many people got those shirts. It was just, it was awesome. We had a great time.
Yeah. We're having fun. A couple more months to go.
We're having fun. And we're going to get through it.
Who goes first based on what?
Karen goes first based on Indianapolis.
Boom.
Wait.
Ow.
Oh, ooh. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Are you okay?
There's too many microphones.
Wait, are we doing based on... Okay, so what we played last week.
It's like based on what the audience knows, right?
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it.
Okay.
That's reality.
Look, listen.
Look.
We're just swimming.
Now, it's interesting because this was one of the stories I wanted to do when we were in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Which was even further back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it?
I don't fucking know.
Okay. Don't be mad at me.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati was.
Yes.
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 So I had this ready and then I was like, don't do this tonight. Because that would be bad. It's the 1979 Cincinnati concert disaster.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. Now, I'd heard of this only because as a child, I watched the television show WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And they actually did an episode referencing it.
Pulled from the headlines.
Yeah.
Or ripped from the headlines.
Usually ripped. Sometimes
lightly, gently tugged.
Gently cut out with safety scissors from the headlines. But so that's, I knew the general concept of it. But now I tell you what happened.
Please do.
Okay. It's September 1979.
Here we are.
Here we are. Jimmy Carter's the president.
Hi.
There's an energy crisis. Everything is brown and velour and acoustic and smells like bad pot.
Turn your lights off.
Turn your lava lamp on.
Turn your lava lamp on and your lights off.
And put your famularies on and get ready. So, the children of today have to remember this is before, obviously, the internet. It's before everything, to the point where at one point they're talking about the ticketing situation.
Oh, yeah.
There's a company. Do you remember the company Ticketron?
No.
That was like the original...
Ticketmaster.
Yes, thank you. I would have never.
Wow.
I had half of it and I would have never been able to say that. Ticketron, that's where the Ticketron and the letters were in like digital number
Ticketron.
Pieces.
Was it like
Ticketron?
Ticketron.
Ticketron.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Green pieces.
Everything is robotic.
But nothing was robotic because you had to go up to a window and show up and be like, yes, I'd like to go see The Who.
I did that until like 2000 because it was cheaper. I'd go to a window, buy tickets to whatever fucking shitty bands I wanted to see.
Oh, is that how you do it with like no fee or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently that was the only way you could do it. Ticketron style in the 70s.
Okay.
I'm sure there are other ways. Please, I don't want to hear about them.
We don't care.
I'm sure that you could call up on fucking Western Union and get your tickets.
888.
All these different.
Whatever.
888. You could go to Times Square somehow get tickets anywhere.
You could show up at the concert.
But we're just trying to let the young folks know what it used to be like.
Harder.
It was walking, a lot of more walking, a lot. That's why everybody's shoes were much thicker on the bottom. That's not true. Okay, so. The Who are on a world tour. It's December of 1979. The Who are on their world tour and they land in Cincinnati, Ohio to play the Riverfront Coliseum for December 3rd. There are 18,348 tickets available. The show sells out entirely.
Holy shit.
Okay.
They're doing some of my favorite murder numbers. No, they are not.
Congratulations, The Who.
The Who?
The Who. The majority of those tickets, 14,770 of those tickets, are sold as general admission for $10.
Jeez.
So you can go see the fucking Who for $10.
Which in today's dollars
is, let's say it's 110, 11.
Okay, great.
110 and 11.
50.
So, but they called this, the general admission was festival seating. Which usually the term festival seating was used for outdoor concerts and like outdoor arenas where you could, there were no seats.
You'd
and
you'd just about. Be like,
yeah, yeah, here's your ticket. You go in, it's festival seating. It's first come, first serve.
Okay.
But at the Riverfront Auditorium, they did festival seating. And that meant that you would show up, you would get let in, and then you'd have to run for your spot.
Like so a, it was like a seat.
Yes. So whether you wanted to sit or stand, like if you wanted to be one of those people that was right up against the front, you had to get there early and you had to run to the front.
I don't want to do that.
You know, never. So, this is problem A.
Okay.
And there's, we're going through the alphabet twice on this. No, not really. Also the Riverfront, Coliseum, was known for its lax security and safety standards, which I think is how everything was in the 70s.
Yeah.
But 2 years before, Led Zeppelin had played there. And about 1,000 people showed up without tickets, and then they just gate crashed. They fucking, like, attacked the ticket takers, threw bottles and garbage and the cops.
Shit.
And then
they
threw cops at ticket takers. It's not right.
It's terrible.
Just little cops though. The little one. They basically were able to, so 1,000 people showed up to do that. 70 got arrested. So 930 people got into that Led Zeppelin concert
and
for free.
And they still played. Shit.
Yes.
It's and, $10, 1970s kids.
Yeah, but they didn't have anything.
I get it.
They just didn't have anything.
Yeah.
So, and basically it was that kind of thing where they knew they could do it. I mean, there was people that would just go up and push the ticket taker aside and run in and then like, you can't get caught.
Yeah.
So knowing that that had already happened, and also a local radio station had announced that the general admission ticket holders were going to be let in at 3:00. So all basically there was the feeling was in the air and people started showing up for an 8:00 concert, 7:00 doors at 12:30 in the afternoon.
Not take a nap.
Right. Well, they basically are there. Most of them are there for 8 hours.
Jesus.
It's December in Ohio.
No.
So it's in the 30s that day.
So it's like rock and roll parking lot. With snow.
With, yeah, like freezing and basically people who are kind of like, it's this kind of ticketing where it's every man for himself.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like a Black Friday feel.
Fuck.
Where everyone's like, but the flat screen TV is just the wonderful sounds of Quadrophenia and The Who.
And the housewife is the teenager who's hopped up on Natty Light.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And ready to roll.
And Black Beauties and Reds and all the
uppers
things
and downers, you can poppers.
Get you used to be able to get all those pills in the back of Rolling Stone magazine. You know that, right?
Oh yeah.
You could like mail away for like bad speed, essentially. Let's bring those times back. Okay, so about 1:30 in the afternoon, the head of rock promotion for Electric Factory. There's a company called, it's a promotional company called Electric Factory. And this guy's named Cal Levy. He sees that this crowd is gathering at the main entrance. He goes and asks the Riverfront Coliseum operations director, who's a guy named Richard Morgan, to put some security guards out there and at all the ramp entrances leading to the Coliseum's plaza. And they also asks that the guards make sure only ticket holders come into that plaza. Mm-hmm. So they just don't want people like chilling out there. He also notices there's no police officers anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so he asks Morgan to have some police sent to the venue.
Yeah.
So by 4:00, there's 25 police officers that are kind of manning the area. And by 6:00, the crowd outside the Coliseum is almost to 8,000 people.
Holy shit.
Yes. And so I think there was another misunderstanding. They were going to play Quadrophenia, the movie Quadrophenia, before the concert instead of an opening act. Mm-hmm. They were just going to play that movie. So everyone, I think, in the beginning thought it was going to be this like hangout chill for hours beforehand, but the doors wouldn't open. And, there was that was like a miscommunication. So by 6:15, people are up, you know, day turns to night. The temperatures are dropping. There's a wind chill factor coming off the Ohio River.
Fucking wind chill.
And these people have been waiting some for 8 hours to get in.
Yeah.
So So the crowd is, and the crowd is thinking, expecting that all the doors in front of the venue are going to open. So at 6:15, the people in the back start pushing toward the front, like, and people are knocking and they're like, they want the doors to open. And the people in the back don't realize that what they're doing to the people in the front.
Okay, this is one of my fucking nightmares and why I don't leave the house if I don't have to.
Right, to get caught up in shit like this?
Just to get caught up in shit.
Yes.
And this especially is like rough.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's bad. And it's also that thing where people wouldn't have done it
right
in the back had they known what was happening. The whole thing was a really bad miscommunication on all parts, but it was like people left to their own devices.
It's like, what is it called when a little fire thing happens and then the rest of it?
Wildfire?
Kindling.
Oh, yes.
And they wouldn't, and it turns into something bigger because everyone's reacting to everyone else.
Yes.
And normally if they had known the situation, they would not have acted that way.
Right. And they were holding fast to some rules. So like at one point, in that pushing, people are yelling, open the fucking doors, and they're going 1, 2, 3, push, and like moving the crowd. It's like stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the guy that was in charge, Lieutenant Dale Menkhaus, who was basically the cop in charge of all the cops, he gets a hold of good old Richard Morgan and says, you have to start opening some of these doors so that this like crowd can disperse a little bit. But Morgan says, no one's getting in until sound check is over. And of course, sound check is late because the band is late. So it's, you know, it's 6:30. The doors are supposed to open like general admission at 7 and they don't open at 7 because the band hasn't sound checked yet. But people on the outside, nobody is explaining anything to anybody.
Yeah.
So when 7 passes, people are getting angry and like people are getting a little crazy. There was actually the way everyone was jam packed together and like kind of the frenzy of the crowd. There was a steam coming off of the crowd because it was so cold outside. There was like hot. All this heat. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I know. So they're not going to open the doors right until sound check. So at 7:05, they finally decide, okay, we should open some doors, but they don't open a bunch. They just open 2 doors over on the right, way over on the right. So that means all the people that thought they were in the front that are in front of all the other doors see that now they're in the back maybe because they're not close to the far right doors. And that's when it gets up another notch. So the push starts and people are shoving toward that door even harder. And then, and the other doors, so there's 4 doors open. 2 of them are blocked by cops with billy clubs. Mm-mm. So they're trying to like somehow control. I think by only opening a couple doors, people are just going to go in calmly.
Yeah.
Well, even if that plan, that there were too many people for that even to work at all anyway. And then at 7:30, sound check starts.
So they think the band is starting.
Yes, they fucking think the concert's starting.
Shit.
So they can hear it, and all of a sudden, the huge push happens. Yeah.
Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. So there's a general admission ticket holder. There was an article that was written from the POV of this guy who was there that day. His name is Richard Klopp, and he and his wife got there at like little before 3 so that they could get their spot in line. And he went to a lot of shows, big music fan. Okay. So he had actually written a letter to the Electric Factory, which is a promotional company, the Riverfront Coliseum, and to the city of Cincinnati, telling them that this whole thing of festival seating had to go because he'd been at enough shows where it had gotten all fucked up.
And it's like, just like a free for all.
Yes.
Because there is a thing where it's like, you know, you have these 2 seats, they're your seats, and you know, they'll be there no matter what when you get in.
Yes.
And it's, so it doesn't matter when you come.
Right.
Like that. That's understandable.
Yeah. And if you, if you bought a $10 ticket, but you know that if you can just run fast enough, you have a front row ticket.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like going, who's the biggest fan?
Yeah.
And if you have people that get stuck in the back or they think they've figured out their spot and then they're suddenly in the wrong spot. I mean, that's how it's like. It, the perfect storm of inciting people's like anger and fury. And then not to mention people are on drugs or like we decided we'd take some acid at 4:00.
Oy.
I mean, like who the fuck knows what's going on? So this guy, Richard Klopp, who is 6'2" and weighs over 200 pounds, gets shoved to the ground. And he is down there getting walked on and going, I can't believe this thing that I was writing a letter about is actually happening to me.
That truly terrifies me.
It's horrifying. And he's separated from his wife. You know, this happened to me. We went to see the Pogues. Mm-hmm. I was just talking this with my friend Brian on Twitter on St. Patrick's Day. We were talking about, I went to see the Pogues on St. Patrick's Day when I was a senior in high school. And the opening act was Luca Bloom, who is this awesome Irish acoustic singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. And then the Pogues walk out and they fucking start off their concerts with If I Should Fall from Grace with God, which is this insane Irish like reel. And I got sucked backwards into a mosh pit, spun around once and then thrown out to the side. My feet were never on the ground. I was standing there like, yeah, this thing's gonna, and all of a sudden it was like I was in the washing machine.
My first two concerts were at this fucking shitty, divey place where there was a pit. And yeah, if you wanted to watch the band, you'd get sucked into it.
Yes. Yeah. That was just part of being in the front.
Right.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, I had no idea because I was like, oh, it's this Irish music like my parents like. Yeah. And I was like, no, no, no.
There's some angry fucking men who want to run around and just throw punches.
Yeah. But also run around. I just didn't realize in such a tight group you could do that.
Yeah.
And that was like part of it. It was insane. So anyway, he was basically, he and his wife were separated. He smashed to the ground. He had injuries, but luckily he wasn't killed. So he's trying to get up, he can see there's other people trying to get up. And he can see there's people who are, once they're up, are trying to get up over the doors to get away from, to get out of that crowd. That essentially it's like become this weird machine.
Yeah.
And the people that are pushing and the people that are walking, no one knows that people are on the ground being trampled.
Yeah. Because they're probably being like pushed forward like a wave anyways.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it's all, it becomes like it's not about your personal will.
Right.
There were people who were there that said that they saw bodies piling up by the doors. They saw people trying to get to their feet. They saw people being swept just by the crowd. But no one really knew because basically then once they were in, everyone was running to get to the front.
Yeah.
And everybody was realizing, the concert hasn't started or whatever. So then it was kind of like that basically the concert went on as planned. And everybody just went in and watched The Who play. It's not until 7:45 that the police officers find the first dead body on the ground.
My God.
So it's because also the police are around the back. They're basically kind of on the outside of this.
Thinking that people are going to try to get in from other ways.
Yes. They're focusing on like people being rowdy and making sure a riot doesn't start because that's essentially what happened at that Led Zeppelin concert. They just want to make sure it's not a riot.
Yeah.
And so they're looking at the wrong thing and they're not even noticing that there's people on the ground. So it's not until 7:54 that officers find the first body. Then officials are starting to realize the severity of the situation. They call for help. So then ambulances are brought in, the fire department, more police, then reporters show up on the scene. And so now we cut to a fancy restaurant in Cincinnati.
Why?
Because
what are we doing here?
This is the first day of the mayor. It's his first day on the job.
Oh, shit.
His name's Ken Blackwell. He's having dinner with House Speaker Tip O'Neill.
Oh.
And he gets the call. The shit is going down at the Riverfront Coliseum.
Like, bring a fucking telephone to his table.
Yes.
Mayor, sir.
This is the longest cord we could find. So he has to go down there. And basically, they have to decide when he arrives, they decide, do we end this concert? Do we pull the plug now? But he believes, and the fire marshal agrees with him, that if they then pull the plug, there will be a riot.
Totally.
For sure. So they let the concert go as planned. So at 8:45, a promoter named Larry McGid informs The Who's manager, Bill Kerbishley, that four concert goers are confirmed dead.
Ugh.
And He tells them there were two ODs and two crushed. That's the story. For some reason, the fire marshal was under the impression that there was a mass overdose at the beginning of this concert. And they were like, people, I think, were trying to like, they were partying and they were doing drugs. Yeah. And these rock and roll kids have done this to themselves. Yeah. That was what they were kind of trying to do. It sounds like at first. He quickly learns, though, that none of the deaths are drug induced. They were all due to trampling and asphyxiation from being in that crowd. So when the set is over, the Kurbishly, the Who's manager, pulls them aside and says, make your encore as short as possible.
Yeah.
Because something has happened. So they basically go out, do their encore, get off stage. And finally, once they come off from the encore, they're informed that 11 people have died. 11 people were killed in that stampede.
Wow.
And another 26 were injured. So in the weeks following the concert, there were arguments over who is to blame. The media reports pointed the finger at like rock and roll culture, whatever, saying it was drugs, alcohol, and general rowdiness. But the people at the concert were just like, no fucking way. They planned this so badly.
Yeah.
Everything about this was bad planning. And that idea of like holding the doors,
right,
that they were going to be able to control an 8,000 person crowd who were made to wait all day.
Totally.
And not communicated with in any way. There was no safety setup or communication in any way. So Pete Townsend is apparently, in the subsequent shows they did, Pete Townsend's visibly shaken. The only person who speaks on it is Roger Daltrey, and he basically says, there are no words to say how I feel. I'm a parent. I have a boy who's 15. I have two little girls. And all I can say is, I'm sorry for what happened. I mean, you know, they felt fucking terrible.
Yeah.
But I think there was also that thing of like, that they were just the object of all of that and had nothing to do with crowd control or the way the tickets were sold. And the next night's show was in Buffalo, New York, and it was dedicated to those who died in Cincinnati. Safety measures that might have once been considered unnecessary are now implemented, like going forward.
Like immediately.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, of course, the families of the victims who were trampled sue the city of Cincinnati, The Who, and Electric Factory Concerts. And in 1983, all those suits were settled and the families of each of the deceased received a six-figure payout, which was something around $150,000 at the time. And the people who were injured received a smaller, although substantial, payouts as well. The mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, canceled The Who's performance that was later that month, December of 1979, despite the fact that Providence had only assigned seating and there was no chance that that could have happened.
Rhode Island is a very careful place.
They just won't risk it. But this is what I love. 33 years later, The Who returned to Providence and honored the tickets from 1979. So if you bought one and you didn't get to go, you could go for free that night. Yes.
That's beautiful.
I know. Isn't that nice? And then on December 27th, so the same month that it happened, the city of Cincinnati banned festival seating with very specific exceptions. And the ban stood for 25 years. It was repealed very controversially in 2004.
Wow.
Yeah. Probably for fucking
Justin Timber.
I was going to say Lollapalooza.
Lala starring Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. starring Justin Timberlake. And then basically, because WKRP in Cincinnati was a sitcom about a radio station, obviously, in Cincinnati.
Right.
And they were all about, this was back before you had to pay, you know, for every needle drop on every TV show and all of those, every song you hear on TV shows now, people get paid for, and rightfully so. But back then, you know, WKRP, they played Steely Dan. They played music throughout that show just in the background.
Yeah.
So kind of almost like with respect to that, they had this episode where basically a similar thing happens. Mm. And they, at the end of it, dedicate, that episode to the victims of the 1979 Who Stampede.
A very special episode.
Yeah. And there's a website I got a bunch of this information from, aside from Wikipedia. There was a website called ultimateclassicrock.com.
Yes.
Right? That talked all about it. And they had this great, they did an article specifically about the WKRP episode. And I think you have to buy WKRP like on DVD to watch any of it.
Wow.
But I liked this quote. They said, still, if, because they were talking about how hard the balance of it, it was a straight up sitcom, and then they're dealing with like a very special episode. Mm-hmm. But they did it perfectly. They did stuff like that a lot, and they were really good at it. But the quote is, still, if the in concert episode stands for nothing else, it at least has the honor of saying this. 35 years ago, when things got real, right in the backyard of its fictional setting, WKRP in Cincinnati did not flinch.
Yeah.
And they really didn't. And they, the guy that wrote it had to fight with the showrunner about it, and then they decided to do it, and then the network was like, we don't think we should do this.
Right.
So the actual episode ended up airing February 11th, 1980. So it was like a month and a little later. In 2015, a memorial marker was finally placed outside the what's now called the US Bank Arena for the victims whose lives were lost that night. And it was paid for entirely by individual donations. Aww. So it was a crowdsourced memorial. And so the people who died in the stampede on December 3rd, 1979 are Walter Adams Jr., who was 22. He was from Trotwood, Ohio. Peter Bose, who was 18, from Wyoming, Ohio. Connie Sue Burns, who was 21, from Miamisburg, Ohio. Jacqueline Eckerly, who was 15, from Finneytown, Ohio. David Heck, who was 19, from Highland Heights, Kentucky. Tiva Ray Ladd, who was 27, from Newtown, Ohio. Karen Morrison, who was 15, from Finneytown, Ohio. Stefan Preston, who was 19, from Finneytown, Ohio. Philip Snyder, who was 20, from Franklin, Ohio. Brian Wagner was 17, from Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Oh, it's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. James Warmoth, who was 21, from Franklin, Ohio.
Such little babies.
They're all babies.
Who just went to have fun.
Yeah.
I just think about how scary those last moments had to have been. Like, I definitely, this is one of those ways that you think about dying.
Yeah.
If you're obsessed with that shit.
Well, and that idea that, like, because we've all seen, like, the Black Friday videos where,
right,
if you go down in a crowd like that, the only way you come back up is if someone looks out for you.
It's a wave. And it's, yes, not even, I mean, it's not even everyone else's fault. It's this, like, wave of humans that have no control over that.
Right, because they're being pushed too.
Right.
It's like that. Yeah. It's like, it's so awful. Yeah. It's worst case scenario. It's horrible. This is why I didn't want to do it on a live show, but I yeah, did want to do it because it's like,
yeah,
it's one of those disasters that's like the preventable, and now they know that.
Yeah.
You know, but those ways were like how preventable disasters, how things, why things are the way they are.
And like bad decisions based on money too.
Yeah.
It's like, just at that point, open the doors and let everyone in because it's dangerous otherwise.
Yes.
You know, and it's instead of the $10 you would have gotten from however many people who didn't have tickets, it's like, just let them in.
Yeah.
Because everyone needs help.
Right. And the idea that I think people understand now, it's like, if you're going to have a concert with, 18,000 people, you got to get some staff.
Security.
You can't have three people at the one door way over on the right.
Right.
Like, everything has to be prepped for safety first.
Yeah.
Which I think they know now.
They
know.
It seems like that.
But I just want to say I was 9 at the time, and fucking no one gave a shit about safety when I was 9 years old.
No, they didn't.
They really didn't.
Took a long time.
Yeah.
Well, that was amazing. I mean, fuck, dude.
Yeah. It's a heavy one, but I just was like, oh, it's such a, I wanted to do it that night so bad, but I was also like, how awful would it be to sit in a theater, uh-huh, and be like, uh-huh, what else happened the night that...
Name the people.
Yeah.
It's the, I guess it's the same thing with like the name of this podcast where I want to be like, I love that stories like that.
Right.
But really I love them. It's like, it's my favorite because I hate it.
Yes.
But it's I'm fascinated by that shit.
Because also it's like, you're right. Those times that you're like, I don't like this feeling in this crowd. I need to get over to the side. And you think, oh, I'm crazy or I have this anxiety. You're right. Because you have to be careful in big crowds.
Yeah.
You have to be careful, and you can't just trust that everything's going to go great.
No, I get really freaked out in crowds like that.
Yeah.
In any crowd. Watch your friends, watch your back, watch your friends' back. Watch your back's friends.
Don't be afraid to walk into the concert a little bit late. You heard that fucking song before?
Oh my God. Don't worry. It sounds the same on a radio. That's amazing.
All right.
That was great.
Thank you.
Good job. It has to be told.
Shutting down. Had to tell it.
Shut down and rest and sit down and sink down and let me tell you a story.
I love it.
Okay. So this is a story I found when I was searching for a story to do when we go to St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
In the future.
Yes.
And I was like, well, this is incredible. I have to do it now. How have I never heard of this?
Okay. Wow. That's really saying something that you can't wait
right.
for the... Okay.
It's like the opposite of yours.
Yes.
Okay. This is Glennon Engelman, the killer dentist.
What?
That's right. So I found a lot of information from an Oxygen article. Remember FBI files? I totally yes. forgot about that.
Yes.
FBI files, episode called Deadly Dentist, a show on ID. That show was called Deadly Dentists.
Oh.
And the episode was called Concealed Abscess.
I've had those. Oh, that reminds me. I need to make an appointment.
You gotta go. Well, this will make you not want to go to a dentist anymore. All right. Let me tell you about Glennon Engelman. He's born in St. Louis, on the South Side. It's a blue collar working class neighborhood in 1927. One of four children. His dad's a railroad worker. And then it says, and his wife. Because that's his mom.
That's right. And the wife was a wife
mm-hmm.
and a mom.
Yes. So Engelman.
And a railroad engineer.
That's right. Just don't worry about it. She made a mean pie.
That's right.
Engelman graduated from Washington University's dentist program in 1954. He wasn't a great student. He did fine. I guess you can just pass dentist school without great grades.
Don't like that.
Nope. It's just sucks.
I'd really like to only experience the best of the best when it comes to dentistry.
Especially in 1954 when shit was probably like fucking still medieval.
That's right. Right? That was back before they hid the big needle behind their back.
Yeah.
They're like, do you like big needles?
Right. Bloodletting.
I have one.
Let's make these teeth out of fucking elephant tusks. Okay.
Sorry, but it does remind me because I was going to the dentist really regularly until this last season of Baskets, and then everything like shut down. But I am going back next week, but I haven't seen my hot dentist in so long. What if everything's different now between us?
I know. What if he's not hot anymore?
What if
his teeth got replaced by toenails? Would you be stoked? Or bummed?
It's some weird, like he was became bewitched for some reason.
Little children's toenails.
That's,
no.
It'd be the cruelest thing to do to a dentist who knew the importance of
hygiene. It's almost impossible that that's going to happen.
I'd say it's almost impossible.
Almost. Okay. But never say never.
Okay.
So Glennon opens his own practice in his neighborhood where he grew up, St. Louis's South Side, as I said. And so everyone's like stoked that he's like sticking with the neighborhood. He's like, you know, one of us and et cetera. And he also treats his poorest patients for free a lot of times. So he's like generous and shit. However, don't like this guy yet because according to the book, Appointment for Murder, the story of the killing dentist by Susan Crane Backos, he was a rabid racist, anti-Semite, and dabbled in the occult, mixing a voracious sexuality.
Oh.
The last two I can deal with. The other shit, I don't like. So his first marriage was to a student teacher named Edna Ruth Bullock, and it lasted 3 years. And after the divorce, he continued to give her money and they still had sex. And she also continued to see him for dental care, which is like pick one. You know what I mean?
But he was so great at all of them.
He was just great at all. He was like mediocre at dental care, but who else are you going to go to?
That's right. And same with sex. But look, a lady doesn't have that much time.
He knows you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He knows your quirks. You have to explain how you come to shit.
You don't have to explain why you need your arm up that certain angle
right,
all the time. It's
right.
just, yeah.
It's just complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So his ex-wife, Ruth, then marries a dude named James Bullock. He's a 27-year-old clerk studying to be an accountant, and he's also one of Dr. Engelman's patients.
Okay.
And then on 5.5 months after they get married, on December 17th, 1958, James Bullock is fucking randomly shot dead by a sniper in front of the St. Louis Art Museum.
Oh my God.
But, right. Ruth collects $64,000 in life insurance, which is $550,000 in today's money.
Shit. And half a mil?
Half a mil. And the investigators are like, the investigators are like, this is suspicious. And they look into Ruth's life. They discover that, that she is a has a wild side. She has exploits in local bars that are legendary, whatever the fuck that means.
Fucking tell me about it. Ask me about the Rustic Inn. I'll tell you.
Stand on the bar and lift up your skirt.
You better have some exploits.
So she sounds like a fun time gal. I bet she'd be awesome. But they question her, and then they're criticized by the harsh treatment of a grieving widow, so they back off of her. But they also were suspicious of her ex-husband, Glennon, the dentist, but he has an alibi for the murder, so the killing goes cold. 5 years later, in 1963, Glennon is now married to a librarian, and he comes up with another get-rich-quick scheme. He opens a drag racing strip.
Cool.
Which was all the rage back then.
Yes.
Yes. So a dude named Eric Frey, who had recently married one of Glennon's former girlfriends, becomes a partner in the business. He's like, drag racing, let me get in on this.
Let's do this.
Let's do it. But on September 26, 1963, as Eric Frey is helping Dr. Engelman with construction at the site, Frey somehow finds himself struck in the head with a rock and at the bottom of a well that also happened to be happened to contain a large amount of dynamite. And then the whole fucking thing exploded.
What?
It's a freak accident.
What?
No, it's not. Wait, how do you...
First of all, this is starting to sound familiar.
Really? Did I do this one already?
I don't know. Okay. Well, the dynamite. The dynamite.
There's always dynamite.
Wait.
You've done this before.
Are you serious?
I just was trying to find the St. Louis...
Shit! Who did it? Me or Georgia?
Was Pam Hupp? That must
have been... I was Pam Hupp.
So then it must have been... I was like, it sounded really familiar. And I was like trying to find... I was going through emails from like 20... This was 20... When was this? This was... I'm like shaking.
God damn it!
December 8th, 2017.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's 2 years ago.
How am I supposed to...
Go on!
No!
Yes, go on.
No, I'm not going to.
Why not?
Oh, Jesus.
You think anyone remembers my version of this fucking shit?
We have to leave all of this in, by the way.
We never released an episode.
We did never release it.
It was never released.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, then we're fine.
Please leave this in.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, that's... I feel like, Stephen, you buried the lead on that. We never released the episode. It should have come out of your mouth first.
Oh, my God. No, it's insane.
I was trying to go through
the... How do we know?
Listen, we need to attack Stephen a little bit more before we get back.
Stephen, how did you not know earlier today that I was going to do this?
Why didn't you tell her? The second... Shit. Here's what I love. You said it's a killer dentist, and then somebody got thrown into a well with dynamite, and I still was like... I don't know.
It's now coming back to me. I now vaguely remember you telling me this story.
But why wouldn't I immediately be like...
Because it's so... Being on stage, there's so much adrenaline. True. And then you go on and you leave.
But this was a St. Louis one.
Yeah. Okay. This is the first time we were in St. Louis.
Shit. But no one knows except for us. And now everybody's listening. Like, this is fresh to them.
Okay, great.
And the people... Wait, do we... Perform it in St. Louis, but just not release that episode?
Yes.
Right.
Got it.
So when we go to St. Louis in like 3 weeks,
they're going to be mad at us. To say.
I got to bring it with a good one.
Yeah.
All right.
That's fun though, because then they'll be like, I remember when this and that.
Yeah. Don't do it in 3 years.
We're creating memories.
Let me tell you some brand new shit.
Okay. Please do.
Fuck. He blew up.
But wait a second. We've been waiting for this moment.
Yes, we have.
We've been waiting for this moment.
Either for us to do the same one, which is way less likely than for us to redo a fucking story.
Yes.
The amount of stories we've done live.
Yeah.
Is vast.
It's
and
incredible.
Expansive.
It's almost like, hey,
look,
listen,
we're going to run out of murders one day. No, we're not.
No, that's never going to happen.
But I was like, this story is fascinating. How am I going to not do this?
It's so good.
Okay, tell me what you remember from this.
I definitely remember the well with the dynamite.
The well and dynamite. How could you forget? The death is ruled accidental. Dr. Glennon.
Sorry, that alone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's ruled accidental. He fell into a well.
After his head got hit.
Filled with dynamite.
Right. You know how you do sometimes at a racetrack.
Yes.
It happens.
Yeah.
It could be hot dogs. It could be dynamite. This guy got
unlucky.
Do
you want to get a stick of dynamite in a hot dog bun? Because there's that. You could have that too.
Is this fucking Tom and Jerry or what?
Wait, can I just say this? Sorry, this is a legit sidebar.
Okay.
But that last pretzel I ordered when we were on the road, I just need to talk about it. Because I actually
texted
Adrian because it was so good.
In Omaha, you got a last pretzel.
I ordered a pretzel and there was a sauce that was Guinness cheese mustard sauce.
Stop it. Did you take a shot of it?
I drank it. I chugged it and then just ate the pretzel afterwards. No, it was the most delicious thing. God bless pretzels. All right. Sorry.
Well, let me tell you about Dr. Glennon. He collected an insurance settlement from his business partner because his business partner just accidentally died in a fucking well with dynamite.
And he was somehow on the thing.
Well, he was his business partner. So sure. He collected the money with his ex-girlfriend who happened to be Frey's widow. And he gave her $25,000. She put $16,000 of that into the drag racing strip.
Yeah.
Remember this?
I sure do.
This is just a reminder. But it went bankrupt in 1964.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like the idea that this is all a very, like, this is what the pink ladies did after high school.
Yeah.
Is what it feels like to me.
You can't. Don't trust dentists.
I want to date a doctor or a dentist, but then I got to stay in the drag racing arena.
Like, it's still cool and hip. He wears a leather jacket.
Yeah.
Okay. A decade passes, as you know, from the research you did for this story.
I know nothing.
Do you remember that he had a 24-year-old dental assistant named Carmen Miranda?
I didn't remember that her name was Carmen Miranda.
The doctor is older, had known Carmen Miranda since she was a child. And she's like, look, doctor, I don't know what to do. I'm having some financial difficulties. And he's like, here's an idea. Why don't you marry someone, take out a life insurance policy on him, and I'll kill him for you. And she's like, great, let's do it.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Just right out there in the open.
Not right on, like, right, but yeah.
A slow play, that was the point. Eventually, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
But he'd known her since she was a child. She's 24, he's older. He's probably manipulating her in a lot of ways. And he said he knew it would work because he's done it before.
Right.
Remember, old fucking dynamite friend.
Yeah, it did work that time.
It did. So she agrees and they find a dude named Peter Holm and she marries him. And almost a year later, after they got married on September 5th, 1976, Carmen Miranda, mm-hmm. lures Holm to a secluded location near Pacific, Missouri. And she stands next to him as fucking Engelman shoots him with a rifle in the fucking head.
Whoa.
And then she takes off running. How awful. So the grieving widow, Carmen Miranda, ends up with $75,000 in life insurance, and she pays around $10,000 to her boss, Dr. Engelman.
Wow.
So, do you remember any of this?
No. I'm shocked about the Carmen Miranda detail not sticking.
Where in the world did that bit of information go?
I think it was replaced when I just watched all of The Sopranos.
Oh, right. Okay, good. So in 1977, this Arthur Guzwell, he's 61, and his 55-year-old wife, Vernita, they have what seems like a breaking and entering burglary situation where they're shot and killed at their farmhouse near Edwardsville, Illinois. The cops think it's a home invasion robbery, and their grieving son, Ronald, was the sole heir to his parents' oil business and inherited $250,000.
Okay.
Which in 1977 money is?
$700,000?
Great. I don't know. See, like, you tell me. It's probably a lot. Right?
It's probably a ton, actually. Yeah. I would say it's $2 million.
It's $2 million.
I bet.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
17 months later, in March 1979, when Ronald Guzwell he's shot and bludgeoned with a sledgehammer at his home. So he's the fucking heir to the fortune. And then he's killed. His new wife, Barbara Guzwell Boyle, collects approximately $340,000 in life insurance. His body's found 4 days later after his murder in a car in an East St. Louis motel. His body
is it a car motel?
No. His body is found 4 days after his murder in a car at an East St. Louis motel, and police go to his home to tell his grieving wife, Barbara, and she is hosing out the garage, which what later turns out to be blood, quote, everywhere.
Oh, no.
Guess what? She used to date our friend Dr. Glennon.
Wow.
Yeah. So the next victim is Sophie Marie Barrera. She's 59 years old. She owned a dental lab and she had done some work for Dr. Glennon, and he owed her $14,500 and she was threatening to take him to court. So he did the rational thing and blew her fucking car up while she was in it.
That's right.
You remember that?
Jesus. This is a if you made a TV movie of it, no one would watch it because it makes no soap.
Oh, you want to bet?
Oh, really?
Oh, it crappens. So in January of 1980, Sophie's car explodes and she starts it killing her. So police are like, all right, it's this fucking dude. But there was also a lot of mob activity going around then. So it kind of got lost in that. But police are connecting the dots. And they were sure that Dr. Engelman was behind these killings. So then his third wife, also named Ruth, comes forward and she's like, I'm a little freaked out because I've been hearing some rumors that he's trying to put a hit on me. And he told me some shit post-coital. And they were like, great, will you wear a wire? And she was like, abso-fucking-lutely. So in 1984, she wears a wire. He tells her everything. Don't do that.
Yeah, really.
So in 1984, Barbara Boyle is charged with her husband's killing, the one who was the heir to the shit. She's arrested. And a month later, Dr. Engelman is finally arrested, as is Carmen Miranda and their two accomplices, who is Miranda's brother, Nick, and a man named Robert Handy. So Miranda testifies against Dr. Glennon in his trial for Holmes' murder. And that gets a guilty verdict and a 50-year sentence. And later, his trial for Barrera's bombing gets him life. So an attempt to bargain for leniency, the accomplice, Robert Handy, offers police details about the Goosewells murder. They're the home invasion robbery older couple. And so he said that Engelman and Barbara Boyle, the wife of the son, had been lovers and they had targeted Ronald because of his money. So, like, she married him to kill his parents and him.
God damn.
Yeah.
I feel like that is, I'm remembering something about that the guy she married was kind of a bore. Or, like, there was, like, a little bit of, like, a thing about him where everyone was like, you're marrying this guy.
Probably.
There was a little bit of that.
Yeah.
That could just be me judging him, though.
Absolutely. There was a lot. I mean, all these marriages that ended in the husband being killed were, like, just a plan. Plainly for that. Yeah. So it could have been anyone, just someone you can convince to marry you.
Isn't dating hard enough without thinking, what if someone's just setting me up for life insurance?
Yes.
Ugh. Another thing I have to worry about.
I have a good relationship, and every once in a while I'm like, did he put poison in this tea?
You're like, wait a second, I just got a Geico update.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Why?
I don't even drink tea. Vince knows that.
I don't like geckos. Why do we?
I don't like geckos. I don't like fucking chamomile.
Get the shit away from me.
I don't like being poisoned.
And I don't like you killing me.
So.
For money.
Great.
You can kill me for passion reasons. That's a compliment.
Yeah.
The money thing is cold.
It really hurts my feelings. Okay. In 1985, he, in order to strike a deal and avoid the death penalty, Dr. Engelman pleads guilty to all three murders and is sentenced to three concurrent life sentences. When he confesses, he says, quote, I like to kill. It sets a man apart from his fellow men if he can kill.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Being a good dentist sets you apart.
Yeah.
That's more so than killing people.
How about you are a decent human being that doesn't fuck every woman that passes your dental practice?
Don't fuck every woman. Don't fucking manipulate them into killing people. You don't need the money. That's what's so weird about it, too, is like everyone's like, he's not doing it for money because he has a successful practice.
Yes.
He's doing it because he's a fucking weirdo sports killer.
Well, and also because he feels, I think it's actually kind of sad where he's like, this is what sets me apart.
Yeah.
Not my interesting hair or my brain. killing people.
Right. Not my interest in a cult and blatant anti-Semitism. Killing people.
My anti-Semitism isn't setting me apart the way I thought it would. I'm going to go ahead and go all the way into killing people.
I mean, just change some crowns. Is that a thing? I don't know.
I think it is.
Changing crowns?
Change them around.
Change them up. So as for Barbara, she's convicted of Ronald's murder, her heir to the throne husband.
Right.
But with help from her attorney, F. Lee Bailey.
Yeah, that guy.
Everyone's favorite dick lick motherfucker.
And he's a super champion.
He sure is. She's cleared of the murder of his parents.
Wow.
And she gets 50 years, but serves less than half that time and is freed in 2009 at the age of 67.
And then she's like, I'm going to spend this money.
Later days, motherfucker.
She's like, give me that money.
Give me that money.
Did she get any of it, I wonder?
I bet she didn't.
No, right.
Because it's probably went to like a niece.
Only fair.
Yeah.
Only fair.
Like a poor and sweet niece who's like, okay.
Okay, I guess I'll get all the roller skates I want.
Yeah, then. And I'm gonna rescue kittens. Aww.
Aww.
She's such a
good
person.
And then she wastes it all on cats.
Hey.
Just waste it.
It's not a waste if it's for a cat. Okay. Here we go. In 1996, a B movie called The Dentist,
yes,
was made that is loosely based on the case. Dr. Engelman is played by Corbin Burnson.
Yes. Okay. We talked about this part.
Okay. What? Tell me.
Because he's from L.A. Law.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, what is he from? And you're like, L.A. Law. Shit.
No. Shit. At this moment right now, we could be dead. And this is just like life replaying itself in that weird way.
I absolutely believe that.
Yeah.
And I went under... General anesthesia yesterday. Yes. Am I awake yet?
Could be you're still sleeping.
I don't know. And are you awake?
When you wake up, you're like, ugh, I dreamed that we recorded already. Now we haven't.
Oh, shit. I should do the dentist, the killer dentist.
No, I'm going to.
Maybe you're still getting a massage.
Oh, could you? Can I just say that I fell asleep? They said, she was like, all right, Karen, get up when you want to. You know,
get the fuck out.
When it's over. And I was like, okay, sounds good. And then I just put my face back in the ring and went back to sleep for I don't know how long. They let me stay in there. I mean, it wasn't that long.
That's
but I
amazing.
Mean, I was out, like, had a short dream, and then was like, whoa, whoa, I'm still here.
I woke myself up with a loud snore on the plane right home from Omaha. A snort.
I didn't hear it.
You didn't? Because I had my eye mask on, and I went literally. And then I immediately started cracking up. I went. It was like so insane.
I missed that. I had my earplugs in though too.
And it wasn't that loud then. But yeah. I did that and then just started laughing.
Yes.
We're doing great.
We're doing it and we're still doing it.
Hey, let's talk about 2 years later from The Dentist and talk about The Dentist too.
Oh.
Brace yourself.
Oh, we have talked about this, but let's talk about it again.
What did we say?
Well, I just remembered that there was a sequel.
How do I not remember this? Was I drinking?
No, I think it was just that we've done this a lot.
Okay, here's something new. So I went to my favorite murder Gmail to look for hometowns, and Amy... said, in the 70s, my dad had a plant store in the then dodgy part of St. Louis called Compton Heights. He was, parentheses, is, a big old stoner. So he spent a lot of time smoking outside the shop, which is how he became acquainted with the dentist who owned the shop next door.
Oh.
Also possibly why his shop didn't last long, but I digress. At the time, the dentist, Glennon Engelman, had an assistant named, I shit you not, Carmen Miranda, who had married an older guy who shortly thereafter wound up shot in the back of the head after having recently taken out a very high insurance policy at Miranda's suggestion. My dad says Engelman was the most terrifying person he'd ever met.
Whoa.
From the time he'd come flying into my dad's shop in a rage, literally foaming at the mouth, shouting about whatever. Super scary dude. And then Kevin said, my mom grew up in South St. Louis County. My mom and her sister began working from an early age to help make ends meet. My mom landed a job as a hostess at a South County restaurant that had many loyal customers who ate there daily and knew the workers pretty well. She still gets recognized today by folks who went there in the 80s.
Aww.
One of these regular customers was a local dentist who was charismatic but odd. He once lectured my mom about respecting the history of coins. Then Kevin wrote, strike one. and was generally a difficult person to serve, strike two and three. Yes,
I bet.
Yeah. He gave off a typical eclectic rich man vibes, so most servers hosts will know the type of guy we're dealing with here. One day, this dentist came into the restaurant, saw my mom, the hostess, puffy-faced and crying. He asked her why she was so upset, and she told him that she was worried about her mother after a car exploded that day near the Southside National Bank, where she worked as a housekeeper. Mm. It was the 80s, there was a spike of mob crime, blah, 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 blah. The dentist told her that her mom should be safe because the car wasn't close enough to do any real damage to the bank. He then reassured her that everything was okay, ate his meal, and went his way. My mom later found out from the local news that the man in the restaurant, Dr. Glenn Engelman, was a dentist by day and a hitman serial killer by night. So basically, my mother was consoled about the car explosion by the very serial killer who rigged the car to blow up in the first place.
Holy shit.
So he walks in, she's crying, and he's like, your mom's fine.
No, don't worry about
it. She wasn't the target.
Yeah, no. Don't worry about it at all.
Okay, so Dr. Engelman was 71 when he died of complications with diabetes in 1999 at the Jefferson City Correctional Center, as you know, since you've researched
this. That's the part that stayed with me most.
He had been diagnosed as a sociopath while locked up, and it was reported his IQ was near 140, which is high. He showed no remorse for anything.
Of course not.
His killing spree lasted for 30 years from 1958 to 1980. And altogether, he's suspected in 12 killings.
Jesus.
But if it hadn't been for his brave third ex-wife, Ruth Jolly, with whom he had a son, it could have been many fucking more.
That's right.
And that is the second time we are telling the story of Glennon Engelman, the killer dentist.
Second time, but only first on wide scale.
Right.
First time was a select audience. We did a test audience.
That's right.
In St. Louis.
We tested it.
They were like, it's fine. We're not going to remember it. It's not. Nobody's marking down any of these moments.
Like, there's canned wine for sale in the lobby.
Let's party.
Let's get another canned wine. We've been pre-gaming with the Murderinos. We raised money. Like,
let's game. Then let's post-game.
That's right.
Let's drink the whole time. Yeah, I think that was great.
Thank you.
I'd love to go back to the part about falling into a well filled with TNT.
The part is don't do it.
Yeah, do your best not to.
Yeah.
So but if someone hits you in the head with a rock,
what are you gonna do?
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Fucking Dennis, man.
So you said it.
Don't go back to your dentist. No, do it.
And then all my teeth just start falling out slowly as we talk.
Why do you have children's toenails in your mouth instead of teeth? Is that the new thing?
Children's toenails.
I don't know why.
Clear? Is it what you think of when you look at my teeth?
No.
Oh, that's like a diseased child's foot.
It's like the thing that's closest, but like clearly not. And you're like, why does that look? Oh God.
No. It's child toes in an adult mouth. That's awful. That's, we got to tell Guillermo del Toro about that idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking hooray.
Yeah.
My fucking hooray is that.
That it's over?
Do you have a fucking hooray?
I may have mistakenly done my fucking hooray of talking about my 2-hour massage at the top. But you know what it is? Here's what my fucking hooray will be. First of all, and this is going to sound super corny and cheesy, but we had in that last weekend of shows, the most fun talking to people at the meet and greets, to the point where a couple times Vince had to say, hey, look, the line, we still have a whole line of people. You guys have to move it along.
Yeah.
Because we love the conversations that we have with people and talking to people and just like connecting with people. So we oftentimes will complain about like being tired or complain like that we're doing a bunch of stuff. But to me, I would say my fucking hooray is those people that come and say hi, or that, you know, that are at the meet and greet, that come around that corner and they tell us really private things, or they just tell us, what about those women who were like, we all met at the Chicago show at the Red Vic.
Years prior.
Yeah. They were standing in line by each other to get into the Chicago show. They're still friends to this day. What was that at the Kansas City show? I think they showed up as a foursome, going, we met in line and now we're all still great friends. Like, we have these kind of peak experiences that we're having so many of them, it's hard to appreciate them.
Sort of process right now.
Yes.
Because we're in the middle of it and we can't stop. We have to keep going forward.
Yes.
And if we think about it too much, it's It's a lot.
It's a lot.
To process.
But it's a series of Grandma Cheryls, and it's a series of the women from the Chicago who met in line at Chicago and are still friends to this day.
And the women who come, and the women who come by themselves to the live shows.
Yes.
Can I, I'm going to jump on your bandwagon.
Because get into it.
I was thinking about it recently, about how hard 27 was for me, and 28 and 29 and 30 and 31. And how it took me a while, and I didn't, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends, and you kind of like, you need these, a community, and you don't have one. I was like post breakup and shit. And it's the Murderino community is this community that I wish I had had then.
Yeah.
And instead of being bummed about not having that, I'm just so happy that we've made this and they've made this thing that they can have now. And
yeah.
I think, I mean, I would have benefited so much from it. And so I'm benefiting in a different way, but I'm just so happy it exists.
It's amazing. And to kind of see it in real life, like that's all, it sounds, it's stuff that like you can't believe until someone's telling you to your face.
Yeah.
Our friend that we saw in Omaha, who the first time we met her was in a meet and greet, and she was about to get the first of many brain surgeries.
Yeah.
And when we met her, she was at the beginning of that road, and we just saw her again in Omaha, and she looked like a different person.
Yeah.
And she was like, I got a couple more left, but I'm doing great. And like, I was just laying there listening to you guys. Like, we get to hear stories like that, that are genuinely amazing, huge compliments, but like, it's just big stuff.
Yeah.
And it, there's a bunch of them in a row, and then we all go home and go to sleep and then complain about being tired, when really what we want to do is tell you every single one of these stories because they're, each one is amazing.
And if we really processed it, we would just be bawling the whole time because it's huge. It's incredible. It's unexpected as fuck. And it's incredible. Like, we're so grateful.
Yeah.
We can't believe this is our lives.
I know. And each one is even like when people come up and go, I don't know what to say to you, and I didn't bring you anything. And we're like, we know, we get it. We love it. And we take a picture and then they walk away.
Yeah.
It's equally as exciting for us because we can't believe that we get to even have a meet and greet.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we get to share a fucking hooray, which is fucking hooray for the audience that listens to this show and decides to participate so much with us and with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. We're happy to be part of it.
Yeah. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for that special episode.
Ay vey. What a mess.
What a gorgeous disaster.
What a glorious mess we've made of ourselves.
Oh, I love it.
Love it.
Stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Elvis, you want a cookie?